Okay, let's get it. It is Locked On LSU, your team every day. I'm Matt Moscona. LSU beats Florida in Tiger Stadium 42-28. We'll recap it. The good from the offense, the not so good, and then about face from the defense, and where LSU stands in the national rankings. That's all coming up in the next 20 minutes or so, and glad to have you here. So the Tigers win, but Ed Ogeron afterwards said, still a lot to work on.
We're 6-0, we're going to enjoy it tonight. But I'll tell you what, you know, tell the truth, Monday, there's going to be a lot of things on the film that we won't like. And it's good when you win and you still got to get better. This team is hungry. This team is fresh. I think we're about as healthy as we've been. Hopefully we'll get Terrence Marshall back soon. I think Glenn Logan got to see Glenn and Rashard back and made a difference in our football team tonight.
In the next segment, we'll talk about the defense. So we'll talk about Lawrence and Logan and getting some of those guys back healthy. But I want to start with the offense. And for context, understand, as I'm sure many of you already do, the fact that the Florida team that LSU faced is by far the best defensive team that LSU has faced all year. They were top 10 in the country in sacks, in pressures, in takeaways, in tackles for loss. This was a really good, aggressive defense that LSU was going against. And many of us, yours truly included, wondered, how would the LSU offensive line stand up against that Florida pass rush? And could they generate offense at the clip that they had against Vanderbilt and Northwestern State and on and on and on? Well, the answer was emphatic. LSU ran just 48 plays and scored 42 points on 48 plays. We wondered if LSU could run the football this year. 24 rushing attempts for 218 net yards. Amazing. A 200-yard rushing game against that Florida front. How's Joe Burrow? Oh, still pretty good against a professional, you know, a Sunday secondary. 21 of 24 for 293 and three touchdowns. Joe Burrow had as many passing touchdowns as he did incompletions against a secondary filled with guys that are going to play at the next level. Y'all, if anyone had any lingering doubt, and I laugh so much at the notion that Joe Burrow is a system quarterback, the touchdown pass he threw to Justin Jefferson in the front right corner of the end zone on the run, that is the biggest difference in Joe Burrow's game. His ability to elude pressure, throw accurately and strong-armed enough on the run to make that touchdown pass like he did to Justin Jefferson in the first half, stunning. Burrow was awesome. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, his best game as a Tiger, 13 for 136, two touchdowns, a long of 57 on the first play of LSU's second offensive series is when he busted up that 57-yarder, and then Ja'Marr Chase scored on the next play. It was a two-play scoring drive for LSU to get in the end zone. We even got to see Ty Davis-Price carry the ball three times, a 33-yard touchdown run. You can see the explosiveness with Ty Davis-Price and John Emery. And then maybe the biggest surprise offensively, as much as LSU had spread the ball around this year, only four players caught passes, by far the lowest in the game this year. But the Stars took care of business. Justin Jefferson, 10 for 123. Ja'Marr Chase, 7 for 127. Chase scored twice. Jefferson scored once. Thad Moss caught three balls for 38 yards. And Stephon Sullivan had a catch as well. But it worked. LSU didn't have the ball a bunch, but it just didn't matter. I know there are some people that will lament the time of possession. And Florida possessed the ball for 38 minutes and change, LSU for just under 22 minutes. And I'll continue to reiterate this over and over again. LSU fans have just got to become accustomed to watching a different style of football. You're not going to win time of possession. And that's okay if you're scoring 42 points against Florida. The comparison I'll give you is Chip Kelly's Oregon teams. They routinely lost time of possession by 15 and 20 minutes a game, but they were scoring 50, 60, 70 a game. That worked for them. They were a hair away from winning a national title in 2010 against Auburn. There are many different ways to skin a cat. This is the way offensive football is played at an elite level in college football in 2019, and LSU is playing it at as high a level as anybody right now. A couple other things I want to talk about, but first, here was Joe Burrow talking about the game.
You know, I just made a comment that I said, don't let good enough get in the way of greatness. And that just means come back to work on Monday ready to go. We still have a lot of room to improve. You know, obviously, we're going to enjoy this win. It's a big win for us, and we're going to obey the 24-hour rule. But, I mean, we just can't get complacent because we have so much more room to improve, so much more to accomplish, and I really think we can get there.
Joe Burrow is playing the quarterback position at as high a level as any quarterback in the country right now. You could make a legitimate argument that he is the best quarterback in college football right now. Joe Burrow has taken himself from a day three draft pick to a very likely first round draft pick in 6 short weeks. And it has been an awful lot of fun to watch. But the biggest story on Saturday had to be LSU's offensive line, a maligned group that was dominated by Florida a year ago, and they did not allow one sack of Joe Burrow on Saturday.
You know, I knew that Lloyd Cushenberry and D. Lou and felt good about Ed Ingram, but our tackles really, those ends were really good. And you can see in games before, those ends really destroyed some offensive tackles. So I'm really proud of our offensive tackles, Sadiq Charles and Austin Douglas. I thought they played a phenomenal game.
No sacks, no quarterback hurries or hits, no passes deflected, one tackle for loss all game. That's what that Florida defense did. LSU's offensive line whipped Florida's defensive line. And I know after the game, Dan Mullen bemoaned the loss of Jonathan Grenard and Jabari Zuniga was injured as well. Sorry. LSU's played for a month without Rashard Lawrence and Glenn Logan, and both those guys played in this game, but not a ton. LSU at one point had two true freshman cornerbacks on the field. Like, cry me a river, man. Injuries happen. Be better than one player exiting the game. And Florida wasn't. LSU was a better team, and its offensive line absolutely dominated. Here was Joe Burrow one more time talking about the line.
It seemed like they were really concerned with our RPOs tonight, and whatever they did, we made them wrong. I mean, that's about as flawless as an offensive line has ever played that I've ever seen.
Burrow also talked about the lack of pressure.
Last year, you know, they kind of got after us up front, and they kind of took that personal. And I was so proud of those guys. They had a great week of practice. I could lie to you and say I expected zero. I mean, there was no pressure the entire night. I didn't feel pressured a single time, let alone the sacks. I made a couple bad protection calls, which might have been the only reason that I had ever been pressured tonight. But, I mean, hats off to those guys. I'm so proud of them.
So LSU is 6-0. They just faced the best defense they faced all year and passed with flying colors. In 2 weeks, Auburn will be in Baton Rouge and will pose a similar test as Florida. But, man, given what LSU was able to do this past weekend, it is hard to imagine any different a result as what we saw this past weekend. All right, it's Locked on LSU, your team every day. Let's knock out a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about the defense or a few more questions there. That's next. Locked on LSU, your team every day. We continue Locked on LSU, your team every day. I'm Matt Moscona. Glad you're hanging out with us. Tigers beat Florida 42-28. The 42 is probably expected. 28 surprised a lot of people, maybe more so even the 21 in the first half. There's two ways of looking at it. Florida certainly got theirs in the first half of that ballgame. Kyle Trask did not look like a guy starting on the road for the first time since junior high. And Florida put up 21 points against the LSU defense in the first half and then actually took a lead in the third quarter, 28-21, after having the ball in the first possession. And Van Jefferson got off against Derek Stingley. But LSU would tie it, they would force a punt, get the lead back, and then never give that lead up. Here was Ed Ogeron talking about the defense in the first half of the game.
Yeah, no question. We had to get off the field. You know, we couldn't get off the field. I wanted to get the ball back to offense, give them credit. But you know what? The first half was not a very good defense. We didn't play good defense. They kept on nitpicking here and there. But the object was to win the game, play for 60 minutes. Our guys came in at halftime. There was no panic at halftime. We always believed we was going to win. A great job by our staff and great leadership by our football team.
What appeared obvious in the first half is that LSU was rushing 3 or 4 the entire first half. They were content, the Tigers were, to play coverage and make Kyle Trask beat them, to put together 8, 10, 12-play drives. And time again, Florida was able to do that, which was perplexing. They put together a 12-play, 75-yard touchdown drive in the first quarter. They put together another 75-yard drive in the second quarter, a 13-play, 75-yard drive. Time and again, Florida, when they needed it, were able to put together drives, 11 plays, 75 yards, three 75-yard touchdown drives in the first half alone. And then the touchdown drive to start the second half was eight plays, 76 yards. So, you know, the thing coming into this game that I did not think Florida would be able to do was consistently put together long drives with Kyle Trask driving the length of the field. And Trask proved able. But LSU changed its plan in the second half. And it was pretty clear they were trying to bring pressure in the second half to make Trask uncomfortable, and it worked well enough. Here was Ogeron on Aranda's second half plan.
You got to be able to play man coverage, and we manned them up, and they did it. We manned them up in the first half, but it was with a four-man rush, or sometimes with a three-man rush, and it wasn't working. So Dave had some blitzes. He dialed up some blitzes, and it made a difference for us.
In my opinion, the game changed in the second half with a self-inflicted wound by Florida. Florida took the opening drive of the second half, scored to take a 28-21 lead. LSU would get the ball back and tie it at 28. And when Florida got the ball, and at that point, there had been six straight possessions that had ended in a touchdown. With the exception of LSU, you're running out the clock there at the end of the first half, but six straight full possessions that had ended in touchdowns. Florida had a holding call on the first play of its second drive of the third quarter. They went to first and 20. Handed off to LaMichael Perine for a yard. Glenn Logan deflected a pass that brought up third and 19, and Marcel Brooks got the sack. Florida would punt. LSU would go on and score, and that's where you saw Ty Davis-Price rip off the long touchdown run, and LSU would take a 35-28 lead. That's where the game changed. And there weren't many penalties called in the ball game, but that was one that certainly cost Florida in that moment, and LSU took advantage. Speaking of Marcel Brooks, he's one of those guys, the athletic freshman that Ed Ogeron used, or Dave Aranda used, coming off the edge in blitz situations. He got home on that sack. He nearly got home again on the Fulton interception, but they called a low hit on the quarterback, which I thought was a bogus call, which we could talk about in a second. But here was Ed Ogeron on Marcel Brooks in his increased role.
You know, we put him in a dime cheetah package. We wanted to put more speed on the field. We ran a little stunt inside. He had a great sack. You know, Marcel is a very talented young man, has a good spirit about him.
So on the Marcel Brooks penalty, and remember there was both the low hit, the personal foul, on Marcel Brooks, and then there was also in sportsmanlike conduct on Grant Delpit. So there were two penalties against LSU, which negated the Christian Fulton interception at the end, which would have sealed it. But LSU did come up with the fourth down stop, a beautiful play by Patrick Queen and Caleb Alchasson there at the end of the ball game to get LSU the ball back to seal it. But I didn't love the penalty against Marcel Brooks because he hit Kyle Trask in the thigh. And I can understand the need to protect quarterbacks' knees and not go low, but you have a range from, like, say, the numbers to the thigh. And that hit was on the thigh. And, you know, if Florida had scored there, then all of a sudden maybe you have a few more tense moments at the end of the game. So I didn't love that. By and large, I thought the referees called a very fair game. There were only five penalties on Florida and four against LSU. And one of those penalties against LSU was a false start by Adrian McGee. So really there were only three subjective penalties called against LSU in the ballgame. So I'm okay with calling it lightly and essentially saying, we're going to let you all decide this on the field. Not going to really try to get too deep into affecting the game. So I was fine with that. But there were two instances that I had an issue. On the tip ball touchdown pass at the end of the first half that Florida got, the fourth down and goal where they went for it, and Patrick Queen was covering two guys, and it looked like all he needed to do was knock the ball down. Instead, he went for the interception. It tipped the ball in the air, and they caught it off the deflection. On that play, Justin Thomas was held. If you go back and watch it from the end zone view, you know, behind the quarterback, Thomas is breaking through, and the offensive lineman has a handful of jersey around the neck and pulls it down. You can even see the shoulder pads. While he absolutely had jersey, I'm okay not throwing the flag there if you're going to let him play. Where I had an issue was after that, when Florida had the ball right before the end of the first half. It was before that, forgive me, before that. But on that same drive, Florida had a 3rd and 6. And LSU came up with a stop. It was a high, they were looking at Pitts, and Stevens was covering Pitts, and it was a high, wide pass, and they called pass interference on Jacoby Stevens. On what was a ticky-tack play where both guys had contact, my point is, if you're going to throw the flag on Stevens in that crucial of a situation for something marginal, then you got to throw the holding penalty against Florida in that situation as well. I don't think officiating won or lost this game for either team. I thought, by and large, they let them play. But in a game where stops were hard to come by, LSU got one, and Florida was sort of gifted new life. And the flip side of it is there was a spot in that game where, as we mentioned on that goal-to-go situation, it should have gone LSU's way and didn't. But I'm not one to complain about officiating and the fact that I don't think officiating wins or loses a game. I thought, by and large, they let them play. I did want to address that, though, since a lot of people had brought it up. All right, it is Locked on LSU, your team every day. Glad you're with us. Let me knock out our final break. We'll come back. LSU rises in the polls, but I still have a problem with it. We'll talk about it as we wrap up next. Locked on LSU, your team every day. Ed Ogeron is going to meet with the media today, Monday. We'll have his updates and player interviews on tomorrow's edition of the Locked on LSU podcast as the Tigers get ready for Mississippi State. LSU at Mississippi State, 2:30 on Saturday. Tigers opened up an 18-point favorite. I suspect that line will continue to swell considering LSU is 6-0 against the spread and Mississippi State is coming off a lethargic performance and a road loss at Tennessee with an offense that just doesn't look like it can score. So I think you're going to continue to see that line rise as this week goes along with LSU at Mississippi State. But LSU will take the number 2 ranking in the Associated Press poll and the number 3 ranking in the coaches poll into Starkville this weekend. And I have a big problem with it. And my problem is the fact that LSU should be the number 1 team in the country. Now, there's probably people listening to this who are not LSU fans, which is fine. And you may assume this is Homer LSU guy going to bat for Old State U. No. I have a general thesis on polls that I've shared here before that I think deserves conversation and needs to be altered. There is far too much groupthink. There is far too much of the media echo chamber. There is far too much of people trying to prove themselves right with their vote as opposed to doing voting based on merit. And that's my issue. In college basketball, polls are based on merit. When teams win, they're ranked high. If you lose, you fall. Like, it's very fluid. You'll have a dozen different top-ranked teams in the country throughout the course of a college basketball season. Maybe not that many, but you understand the point. It's a very fluid thing. And I believe polls should be based on merit. What have you done on the field? What bothers me is when people say, oh, I think they're the best. Well, why are we even playing games? If you think about this logically, if all that matters is what you think, then you're saying the results don't matter. And to me, the only thing that matters is LSU is the only team in the country right now with 2 top 10 wins. They went on the road and beat Texas by a touchdown, and they just beat a top 10 Florida team at home by double digits. There is no team in college football that has done on the field what LSU has done. Now, if LSU falters or if another team comes up and has more impressive wins, then vote them ahead of LSU. But the problem is the only reason that Alabama is voted ahead of LSU today is based on the perception of what Alabama has been in the past. Alabama does not have 1 marquee win. Their most impressive win is their road win against number 24 Texas A&M this past weekend, which is now unranked. Their next best win would be against South Carolina. And you can say, well, South Carolina just beat Georgia, and that's fine and good. But South Carolina is very likely a 500 football team this year. They lost to North Carolina, who's dreadful. Alabama has not done on the field this year what LSU has, and they should not be ranked ahead of LSU. Now, good news, polls don't matter. Polls don't factor in to how we decide a champion anymore, and that's a good thing. But I'm going to continue pontificating. I'm going to continue preaching about this because I'll use whatever platform I have to hopefully change the way people think about polls. We have gotten far too ingrained into how we think things should be done. And in reality, what you think about something is irrelevant. Why are we playing games if what you think matters more than the result? The result is what matters, and nobody to this point has results that match LSU's. LSU should be the number one team in the country. They won't be until they go to Tuscaloosa and potentially win that ball game, but they should be. All right, I'll step off my soapbox, and I'll wish you a good day. We'll be back here tomorrow for the Locked On LSU podcast. If you've not done so yet, please subscribe to the podcast. Share it. Tell your friends it's here every single day. That's how we grow. We've had awesome growth this year, and I appreciate you greatly. Until tomorrow, Locked On LSU, your team every day.